if we're going to talk about God, and we're going to say that God is capitalized, then we are talking about a localized dignity, yeah, a localized deity. And if we're going to talk about a localized deity, we're talking about a particular God. We're talking about the God of the Hebrews. Now, did you know that the Hebrews were unable to say God? How many of you have seen Harry Potter? The first show of Harry Potter. Well, now, the first show of Harry Potter, is a wizard, and his mother and father were killed by a naughty wizard. And the naughty wizard became so naughty that they would not say his name. They would not give his name any power. And so they would not say the fellow's name. Although Harry Potter said the guy's name because he was innocent and didn't know that he shouldn't do that. So when you do not say a person's name, you don't do not empower them to have power over you. Now, that's why things are called the thing is after us or something, you know. So in Hebrew lore, in Hebrew history, in Jewish history, they had no word for the person, the being, the entity, God. God was nameless. And they called God only later, after the Christian program got high in gear, giving God a name. As you say, Jehovah, God, you know, and all these other words that they might use for him. But there was no specific name for God, because it was too great and too magnificent to be named. Now, they would have been wise if they had continued never naming God, because then they would be worshiping the universal God, which is a beautiful thing to do. The moment we worship a deity, we're worshiping all that a deity stands for, and the deity stands for everything that its organization has given to it. We are our deity from the Hebrew tradition is Santa Claus, as we said before. He keeps his little book up there, whether you're naughty or nice, and he throws down, well, like the Greeks, you know, they had God, and they had lots of gods, and they the God threw down thunderbolts at people when they were misbehaving. Well, the Hebrews had their God throwing down thunderbolts too, and doing all sorts of things. Hell and damnation, where do you think that came from? It came from the Old Testament. And these things are why we have so often said that the universal God has a lowercase g. If you will look up in the dictionary the word God, you'll see it has a lowercase g. Interesting, isn't it? Deity is the name of the God of the Byerleys, you know, the God of the Joneses, the God of the somebodies, you know, the God of the Hebrews, the God of the Islams, you see, and all that's good, but there again, we have that inconsistency going on in our thinking, and we think, well, the wind is blowing. Oh, how do you spell wind? W-I-N-D. No capital? Well, no. It's the wind. It's just the wind. It's the universal wind blowing away. Now, is it the east wind, the west wind, the south wind, the north wind? You know, northeast, north, south. But then we name it. Then we capitalize it. But we don't capitalize it when we are speaking of its generic self. And this is what we are speaking of, the generic concept of God as a universal being, universal essence, not being, but a universal essence, universal truism. Now, in the dictionary, what are the names that are given to God?
Lord.
Lord. Well, yeah, that's the other area I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about absolute, the allness, the isness. You know, when we go into the thesaurus and we look up absolute, that's another word for God. When we look up in the thesaurus the word God, we'll get about 3,000 different terms, you know, Lord and what have you. And you see, we limit ourselves when we do that. Now, In our three-hour meditation, some of you have asked if you can do the three-hour meditation at a different time than from 3 to 6. And I say to you, if the doctor says come in for your operation at a certain time, you go in there. Now, if the three-hour meditation calls for this, it calls for you to make a revision in your program. So what you do is you say, all right, God, I choose to do the three-hour meditation. All is in divine order for me to do that. All is in divine order for me to do the three-hour meditation from 3 to 6 every morning. That's when the consciousness of the world is basically asleep. The consciousness of man is basically relaxed, and there's nobody's going to come walking in on me and bothering me, and the cats and dogs aren't fed yet, and they're not going to be bothered and this and that. And so it's done for a psychological and philosophical purpose. This whole thing is designed this way. And part of the design is that most people don't want to get up at 3 in the morning. They don't want to do that. Oh, they'll do it late at night. You do it late at night and you'll be asleep faster than you can shake a stick, you know. In the morning it's bad enough. But meanwhile, you've had 2 hours of work before you come to the sleepy time. And the sleepy time will never be the sleepy time after you get done talking about it here. The sleepy time will never be the sleepy time after we get done talking about it here, because we're going to enter into it in a very playful way, in a very meaningful way. But remember this now. If you gain nothing from our several days together, our 3 days together, then this one concept, it'll be the most beautiful concept you ever had. Jesus said the words, he said, the Sabbath is made for man, not man for the Sabbath. In other words, everything about God is made for you, not you for God. You are not made for God. Everything that God is, you are. And you made God, and you make God exactly as you wish, in your image and your likeness. And if you are a beautiful person, you have a beautiful God. If you are a very sad person, you have an unhappy God, because that's the way you created. Now, you don't have to do that. You can create God to be the most beautiful, gentle, sensitive, loving person, being, essence that ever exists on the face of the earth. But remember, that presence, that essence, that isness, that absolute quality is in you as you. And then go from there and enjoy it. Go from there and enjoy it. I enjoy reading, I don't enjoy reading them, I enjoy hearing about books that have the 12 steps, or that have the 12 this, or the 18 that, or 22 this, or that. And I used to give lectures, and I'd have maybe 18 hours of talks, and I'd give a title to each talk. And people say, oh, I want this talk 14, or I want this. Or when people read the doctoral course, the master's course at the University of Healing, they look at the book, they look at the index, and the first thing they do is they go to the chapter on what do you think it might be? Sex. They love the chapter on sex. That is, I don't know if they love the chapter on sex. They love the idea of going to the chapter on sex. And when they get there, they're not surprised, but they're amused that there's nothing untoward in the chapter. It's a very beautiful, sensitive chapter saying all of these things are emotions that we either have under control or that we have given control away to them, you know. So it's whatever you want to do. But just remember, God was made for you. God was made for me, yeah. God was made for you. Because that's what you're doing every minute. You're creating God for yourself. Now, if you want to, you can say, God, I'm new at this game of creating you for me. Is there a place I can go to school and learn about this? And God says, yes, there is a book within you, there is a I'm within you, and I'll give you a one-on-one course if you like, you know. And but what would I learn on a one-on-one course, God? What would I learn about you if I were just, you know, your only student and you were teaching me direct? Well, the first thing you would learn is that I'm not teaching you. You are. I'm not telling you something new. You already know all things. I'm not being something that you aspire to, that you want to be like me. I am you. I am you. I am your highest thought. I am your most desired attitude. I am the most beautiful aspect of your being. That's what I, as God, am. I am everything about you that is noble and desirable and sought after. But, my friend, I am all. And I am dirty words. I am killing. I am murder. I am every bad thing you can imagine. I am that too, because I am all. I am God. I am all. Now, it's up to you, being God, being me, to determine what playground you want to play in. You want to play in the playground of limitation, unhappiness, of bad words and bad language and bad actions? Or you want to play in the playground of beautiful words, beautiful actions, and things that make you feel happy and good? You can do either. Remember, my beloveds, I will not forsake you. No matter what area of my beingness you express, I am always there, working with you, loving you, seeing you, your highest and your best. And if you ever express badness, don't worry about it. It's no problem. If you ever express badness, I don't call it bad. I just call it an is. And when you in the corner back there, when you can stop calling anything bad, then it ceases to be bad. When you call everything in your life good and very good, then whatever was bad about it is forgotten. The little boy runs out and says, "Shit, mommy, shit, mommy, shit, mommy." And mother says, "I'm going to wash your mouth out with soap." "Well, mommy, I got to go potty." "Well, why don't you just say you have to go potty?" "Well, because the other kids, they got to go take a shit, you know." "And, well, son, that's okay. They have to go and take their shit, that's fine. But that's not a word that we use. And the reason we don't use it is because a lot of people think that it's not a pleasant word to use. But we know that every word is good. Now, what word would you like to do? If you say shit, you're going to make people unhappy. If you say, "I got to go potty," people will say, "Oh, you sweet little thing, go ahead right in there, you know." And you see, it's all a matter. Do you want to really go potty, or do you want people to get shook up by your talking to them? Now, what is it you want to do? "Well, mommy, it's kind of nice to shake them up sometimes, too." That's right. Well, son, you know what I want you to do? I want you to shake them up by showing them how gentle and how loving and how beautiful you are. Whenever anybody, you want to shake up this lady next door who's been kind of a tough one for you guys, you go over and you take her a bouquet of flowers from our garden. And you say, "Here, Mrs. Abernathy, I brought these flowers for you." She says, "You bought them?" "No, I brought them. I didn't buy them. I got them from my garden. I asked my mommy and she said I could bring them to you because I told her I liked you." "You like me?" "No, of course. Here's your flowers." And then he turns around and runs away. Now, what's going to happen with that Mrs. Abernathy? What's going to happen with the boy? I mean, he got a reaction that he didn't expect to get. And you see, when we teach our children and we teach ourselves to go and do nice things because we like doing nice things because it's fun, magic happens to us. And the whole world turns out to be a beautiful, wonderful place. And when we're doing our three-hour meditation and we're ready to say, "I'm God, God I am," and why I can say I'm God, I can say I'm God because I like to do nice things for people. I can say I'm God because I like to do naughty things for people. Yeah, but which one really makes you happy? Well, naughty things are fun too, but which one really makes you happy? You can do anything you want. Now, if you do some naughty things, I'm going to spank you, because I tell you that's not what we allow. But mommy, you said I could do anything I want. That's right. And you take the consequences for anything that you do. But if you do nice things, I'm going to hug you and kiss you and tell you how much, but mommy, no, I'm going to hug you and kiss you and tell you how much I love you, because you're just wonderful. And I'm going to do it right in front of your friends. And you know what your friends are going to say? I wish my mommy did that. I wish my mommy would love me in front of my friends, so that my friends can see how much my mommy loves me. I know their mommy loves them, but I don't ever see her do anything. Would you kids get out of the house? You're messing up everything. You're making a mess out of everything. Get out of here. Get out of here. And what she really means is, I love you boys, but go outside and play now. I'm just in the process of cleaning up the house, so when your father comes home, he'll think I did something today. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that right, Wayne? But you see, this is what it's all about. Love. Love. Unconditional love. Now, we're ready for the third part here. Please, speak again.
We had a question of, we were discussing, and the question is, if we are creating our, well, we are creating our world.
Thank you.
And we have other participants in our play, so to speak.
That's right. In our game.
Mm-hmm. What if they have a whole different agenda that has nothing to do with us? How do they participate and still do their own thing?
Easy. Really easy. You are the creator of your world.
Right.
And you create in your world who you are.
Uh-huh.
And if you look at these people who some people might say have a different agenda and are not participating harmoniously with you, how do you create them?
That's my question.
No. Then you create them. You say, my, that's a lovely jacket you have on. And she's coming over to tell you bitchy stories about the other neighbors, you know. And you say, what a lovely jacket. Where'd you get that? And she says, well, I bought it down at Macy's, but the thing is, did you know what Mrs. Jones did? Did you know? And you bought it at Macy's. Well, did it have a sale? Or was
it direct?
No. Well, the thing is, you talk about what you want to talk about, and that means you got to really be on top. Lovingly. And then she says, well, you're not listening to anything I'm saying. And I said, I'm listening to everything in you that's good and beautiful. You're a fantastic lady. I enjoy talking to you because you've got such a lovely smile, and you know, you have such good taste in your clothes. I'm just so proud about you. And you polish your shoes even, you know, my goodness sakes, you know. And if you don't think that that is more powerful than listening to her unhappiness, you'd be surprised. Because when I was a kid, someone asked me, you know, what did I do when I was a kid? Well, when I was a kid, I was always taller than most of the kids in the neighborhood, and who were my age. And it was during the war, during Depression, and every family didn't have a lot of food. My father was a building contractor, and he dealt with cash. So he had money to bring home to buy food and take care of the family. The other neighbors were all very wealthy neighbors, the Keycaper Lawnmower Company and the Jacobsons and all the beer companies, and they didn't have a lot of cash because their money was all tied up, and their kids didn't always have enough to eat. They'd come over to our house at mealtime and say, that looks so good. Mother would say, sit down. And we'd have 8 or 10 of the neighbor kids eating with us at meals oftentimes. And it was great. Now, I was always bigger than the rest of the kids. And so when I would play with them, I would naturally play with them as I play with them. And I'd pull them in the coaster, and the coaster would tip over, and they'd go sprawling out in the concrete and scratching themselves up. And their mothers would say, now, don't you play with that kid. No, he's too tough. He's too mean. But the kids all love me, and I love them tremendously. And so as soon as their mother was out of sight, they were back in the coaster again. Because they knew I had nothing to hurt them, that I had no desire to hurt them. And they would just say, go faster, you know. And I would have to say, no, I must go slower. especially around the corner. Because if I go around the corner too fast, I'm going to dump them again, and then their mother's going to get upset with me again. And so, you see, when you're playing games with others, you have to do what you know is right. and hopefully you know what is right. You have to do what you know is right and not pull too fast around the corner. On the straightaway, go lickety-split, you know, as fast as your skinny legs will pull you. But have fun and be yourself. And as you are, never make excuses for anything you do in love. And I dumped the kids, it's true. And I said, sorry, you know. And they said, that's okay, that's okay. You know, and they get back on the coaster. They go home looking like ragamuffins, blood all over their legs and stuff like that. But we just had a lot of fun. But you see, when you do it in love, and when you are truly yourself, and you're not trying to do something naughty, to be naughty. Naughty usually ends up being naughty. But when you do something out of love, it all works out beautifully. And the people in your world are exactly what you think you are. If you listen to a person who's swearing and you say, oh, you're swearing, well, you're swearing, not them. If you listen to a person who's swearing and you say, I used to say this aboard ship a lot, the guys would come, oh, Jesus Christ, oh, you know. And I said, you know him too? I said, he's a great guy. And then I'd start talking to them about my books on philosophy, and I'd show them my Unity books and religious science books and stuff like that, and my books on philosophy from, you know, Kant and Plato, and Plato I just loved, and Aristotle and what have you. And they'd say, what are you reading those things for? And I said, well, just listen to what he says. Doesn't it sound great? You know? And Marcus Aurelius, with all the beautiful writing that he did, there's some fantastic things out there that history has. But, and I read this to these guys who are swearing and talking dirty and talking about their encounters on shore at Liberty, you know, and come back with the smiles on their face and stuff like that. And I'd say, hey, but, you know, this is great stuff. They say, you know, you're right, you know, it's good. And my teenage buddies and I, we'd go ashore and we'd have our Coke and our malted milks, and we were unexperienced in the higher arts of lovemaking that some of the boys were into, you know. And we didn't care. We didn't need it. When it came time for our marriage, for my marriage at least, and when others, that was time enough to have our first experiences with sex. You say, my God, what sort of an antique society did you live in? I lived in a society where my mother taught me, respect the girls. Never hit a girl, never do anything to a girl that wouldn't leave you respectful of her. And so when my friends would say something disrespectful about one of the girls who put out or something like that, I'd say, hey, you're making her into a person she doesn't really want to be. Why don't you just say no if she asks you? And you'd probably be the first boy who ever said no to her. And think how good you would feel by not participating in something that would degrade another person. You know, I mean, we're just teenagers, you know, and there's a time for these things, as Mother taught us, and I believe that was right. But you see, I'm not saying I was a goody-goody boy. I was. You know, and you know, you are what you are. And I wasn't better than anybody else, because I had just tons of friends. And I had friends from every spectrum. And everyone, I was, where was I? I know, someplace working. And I was working with prisoners in the prison. And the prisoners would come up to me and they would say, swear and so forth. And then one of them would say, shh, he doesn't swear. And then they wouldn't swear in front of me. And then one guy would come into the group who wasn't aware of what we were doing. And he'd come in with his usual prison talk. And then the other guys would look at him. Oh, no, don't do that. No. Now, I didn't say it. I never told them they shouldn't swear in front of me. But I was their minister. I was coming in as a visiting minister, and I was coming in as a friend and someone who was caring about them and teaching them philosophy and things like that. And they really respected that. But you see, it's up to you. How high or low is your tolerance for standing other people being different than yourself when that difference is not what is your highest and best? If you look at them and say, you know, what side of the toilet seat were you picked out of, you know? And I mean, that's terrible. But the thing is, you look at them and you say, God, you've got the most imaginative, creative mind I could imagine. Tell me some more stories about your trips into the woods when you went hunting, and how you went skiing, and how you used these old wooden skis that we're using, the fiberglass ones now. And my, you're great, you know, you're wonderful. And before you know it, the level of the consciousness of the group is raised up to the peaky top, you know, and it's just wonderful. First thing, do you understand?
Yep.
Okay, I didn't mean to digress so long, but I have fun now. Okay, now, at 2:30 or 2:45, we're supposed to stop and ask questions, but right now I want to give you the third hour of the three-hour meditation. In the third hour of the three-hour meditation, you listen to the divine within you. Now, how do you listen to the divine within you? Well, in the first place, it's not something separate from you. It is your conscious mind, your subconscious mind, your superconscious mind. It's all rolled up into one. It's your divinity. It is speaking to us when we... I'd rather just talk to the first person here. When I turn in to speak to my God self, when I turn in to speak to God in me, I am speaking to my divinity. I am speaking to my highest thought, my highest consciousness. Now, some dumb things come out. Some dumb things come out, and out comes, oh, my toe hurts so bad, I stubbed it, and it's, look at how red it is, and it, oh, it hurts, you know, and that's dumb, you know. And then another thought might come along, boy, you know, the girls weren't very nice tonight, they were arguing with me instead of listening to me and worshiping me like they should have, you know. And so, you know, these are thoughts you have too, you know, your own kids, you say, don't they know I'm your mother, I'm your father, you should respect me. Well, if you want to be respected, then be respectable. Well, I believe that God in me is always respectable. God in me is always fantastic. So I listen, and I listen, and I talk back nicely. I don't talk back with banter, silly banter, but I talk back nicely. And the divine in me says, so you're about ready to listen. And I said, I always have been. And if you always have been, why haven't you done it? Well, I get distracted so easy. Well, that's what happens to little children sometimes too. They get distracted easy too. Now, what do you want to get from listening to me? What do you want to get from listening to the divine within? This is my divine talking to me, asking me what I want to get from listening to my divine within. And that's true. And so I say, well, I'd like to walk on water, and I'd like to heal the sick and raise the dead, and I'd like to manifest money and manifest all these things. And God in me says, well, how serious are you about doing this? Well, I'm very serious about it. Of course, don't you know, God, I'm very serious. I'm talking to God, you know. And God says, if you're serious, then that will be your only attention for the rest of your life. To only see yourself as wealthy, see yourself, whenever you touch another person, they are instantly healed, or look at another person, or think about another person. You don't have to touch them, you don't have to be there, just think about them. Just think about your mama back in Poughkeepsie, New York, you know? Just think about her. And your mom calls, sweetheart, I was just thinking about you. Yeah, mom, how are you doing? I am doing so wonderful. I feel so great. You know, I don't even have to take the pills anymore. I decided today I'm going to go back and tell my doctor I feel so great that he should double check me. And mom, you're wonderful. I don't say, mom, I did it. I know I did it, but I don't tell her that. Because I say, mom, you've got everything going for you. You're doing the right things. I'm so proud of you. You're talking the right way about yourself. I'm the one who's doing the talking. But I don't tell her that. I know that for myself. And so, if I was at a meeting one time, and it was a veterans type meeting, and they were speaking at our Kiwanis Club. And the veterans came with the missing hand and this and that, got blown off with a landmine, and you know, trying to make us feel sorry for them. And I looked at this guy, and I said to myself, you know, if your hand didn't get blown off by a landmine, you'd probably find something else to use as an excuse to go and look for pity from other people. Because that's a sad thing to do. So, my friend, I see you now having confidence in yourself, loving yourself, liking yourself, and thinking that you're a wonderful person, and never again having to go out with your hand up. Never pray with your palms up. Because you think God's outside there? You've got a problem. What's outside there is the world with their limitation. What's inside here is not. When you say your prayer for your treatment, for your offering, what do? You put your hand here. Because this is where your abundance is. This is where your life is. This is where your love is. Now, so I talk to God. And I say, God, I would like to be able to do these wonderful things. And God says, well, you can do them now. Yeah, but I haven't been able to demonstrate. That's only because you keep saying, I'd like to be able to do it instead of I do it. Well, God, that'd be lying if I said I do it when I only would like to do it and I can't yet do it. No, it wouldn't be lying. You are speaking about the truth of yourself. You're not speaking about the illusion where you appear as though you cannot do these things. Now, if you lay your hand on another person and you say, I love you, and the other person just gives goosebumps up and down their body, is that sexual or physical or mental or spiritual? What is it? Well, what it is it's spiritual. It's spiritual, but we want to label it something else because we don't understand spiritual things. And so, God, I would like to do things meaningful in this world. Well, God says, Herb, what's your reason for being here? Herb, what's your reason for being here? Why have you been born at all on this dimension? Why are you here? Well, you know, that makes you stop and think. So I say, well, God, I am here to be who I am, to be myself. And I am here to have fun. I am here to be myself and have fun. And God in me says, right. You're here to be yourself and have fun. You cannot do anything for anybody else unless you first do it for yourself. A man is standing at the edge of the river with his 6 children. And the children are playing there. The river is fairly fast. One child falls in, and the current carries the child away. And the father says, oh my God, I can't swim. And the other children are looking, get her. And she's off. And you can't swim. Now, is he going to take his children away from the water and also learn how to swim? Or is he going to dive in the water and die himself and leave the other 5 children with no one to take care of them? Now, is there a right? Is there a wrong? Is there a noble, good, or bad thing to do? No. He merely has to make a decision. Is he going to take care of his children more wisely than he did the one he lost? Or is he going to go in and just get it over with so that he doesn't have to feel guilty about not having tried to get her, you know? All his life, he'll feel guilty for not having tried to save the little girl who went in. But, you see, these are things we do to ourselves. Life goes on, and we say, hey, I made a decision. Whether it is nobler of the flesh, whether it is more beneficial for me to stay and take care of my children, or to try to help my daughter who is beyond my help, she's already farther downstream than I can swim to catch up with her, you know. And by the time I catch up with her, she would well have drowned before then, you know, because there's nothing holding her up, and her diaper is holding her down. So, you see, these are things you have to make decisions. Now, what do you want to do with your life? Do you want to earn a lot of money? Do you want to raise your children well? Then you just say, God, I want to be wealthy. I want to raise my children well. And God will say, sorry, it's not in the script for you. But God, I want to raise my children well, and I want to earn money. It's not in the script for you. And you say, what the hell is this, God? I'm trying to be right with you, and I'm trying to talk with you in an intelligent way. Why are you giving me this sort of garbage? And God says, you're giving me garbage. You didn't say, I choose that I am wealthy. I choose that my daughter is doing beautifully. I choose that I am wise. You said, I want to be. I would like to be. I am is the only answer we have as we talk with God. I am good. I am right. I am truth. I am peace. I am love. You watch it, young lady. I will not tolerate your wanting to be good. I want you to be good. I don't tolerate your trying. I'll try to be good, Daddy. I want you to be good right now. Right now. Okay. Don't try. That's just an excuse for not doing it. That's an excuse for pretending that you do it. Don't try. You talk to God, and you really talk to God, and the divine in you is going to talk right back to you and say, boy, you're a joke, you know. You say you want this, and then you go out and you do naughty things. You say you want to be a good girl, and you go around with a crowd of people who make it exceedingly hard for you to be a good girl. You say you want to be a good boy, and you don't want to get into drugs or things. One of my students, his son, Pascal, exquisite young man, he was in high school, and the boy raised large snakes and lizards and likes all that kind of stuff. So he started coming home from school and not going out in the evening as he had been doing with his friends. And his dad says, you know, stay at home, go out and be with your friends, you know, what are you staying at home for? And he wanted him to grow up having friends and stuff. And he said, okay. So the kid went out of the house and then came back in again, you know. But finally the father says, why don't you go play with your friends? He says, Dad, they're on drugs and I don't want to be. Please, don't force me to go out with them. You know. If he'd only been listening, you know, he would have realized that his son is pure quality and he chose not to do something. You know, and choosing not to do something when your buddies do it, that's tough. That's real tough. That's a decision that takes quality character. And he had the quality character. Well, his other daughter did the same silly thing in a different direction. The father owned a pharmacy and a drug company, and a very successful, very, very fine man. And the daughter wanted to go into the pharmacy business and become a pharmacist. And so she didn't want her dad doing everything for her like he always does. And she didn't want him speaking to the school about her and him and, you know, being famous and all that jazz. And so she went to school and didn't tell him what subject she was taking. But she took the complete course in pharmacology. She became an exquisite pharmacologist. She worked for her, you know, time which she had to spend in a pharmacy of some other drugstore. And got her certification and all that. And when she was done, then she came to her dad and she said, Dad, I am a certified, registered pharmacologist, and here I'm. You? When did you do that? I didn't know you liked it. Wow! You know, he was so proud of her. But she did it on her own. Now, that took courage. That took courage when he would have paved the way for her, you know, opened up doors for her to have the perfect drugstores and high-paying stuff and this and that and the other. But now, on her own, she is class A number one. She listened to the divine within her. Now, she'd been to a number of my lectures. I can't take credit for all of her, but she listened to a number of my lectures, and she realized that she is the creator of her world, that she is fantastic, that she is great. Now, she recognized the divine within her. You know, young kids today find very little difficulty in saying, I am God. We were down in Nigeria and in Ghana and in Guyana and South America and all over Egypt and all over Europe and Russia too. Russians love this. And as we were taking the concept, I am God, God I am, we went to Nigeria to speak at about four or five rallies they had there. And across the street, as wide as this street is out here, they had a banner saying, "Dr. Byerly and Dr. Jeremy present, I am God, God I am." Across the entire street. And I thought to myself, my goodness, well, what if anyone sees us? And so we spoke to the group, and they said, "No problem. That's what we believe too. We believe I am God." That's the least of our thoughts for ourselves, that I am God. We have no trouble saying that. And you see, that's a lovely thing, when you can be so far into your consciousness that you can say, I am God, without having to put your tongue in your cheek or something like that. That's marvelous. Now, are you ready, willing, and able to say, I am God, God I am? Are you ready to talk to God in you? Are you ready to listen to God? And in listening to God, are you ready to hear what God has to say? God's first admonition to all of us is this: shut your mouth. Don't tell anyone what you're doing, what you've done, where you've been, where you're going. Shut your mouth. Live in the now. Live so beautifully that you believe for yourself that your whole life is a living example of what you believe you are right now. Shut your mouth. When I was a kid, I broke my legs 5 times, and I did this, and I did that, and we lived in poverty, and we lived in this year, and we were in the depression time. Who gives a damn? What do you remember the story I told? You remember the story of our abundance, how we enjoyed having the neighbor kids come in to eat, and their mothers and dads would have loved to come too. But the neighbor kids came over and ate regularly. And my dad never complained. He never said, my God, I'm building the brewery for Pabst Brewery, and then I got to feed their kids too. But he never complained. He loved it. He didn't say he loved it. That wasn't his nature. But he did, because he never complained. Now, can you live your life of not needing to tell other people about the sorrow and sadness that you've had in your life? To tell them only about how wonderful life is right now, and have it be wonderful right now? Did you get up this morning? Yep. Did you breathe a breath of air? Yep. Are you still breathing? Good. You got it going. You're on a swing there. You're on a roll. And did you drink water? You know, did you open your eyes? Did you see out of these eyes of the wonder that's going on around here? Look, you see color. Just think of a poor doggy. He can't see color. You know that? Dogs only see black and white. They don't know that. They don't mind. I had my red shirt on one day, and I thought, surely my dog would see my red shirt and he'd come running to me. And he didn't. He had to sniff and look carefully before he realized that I was there. You see, they don't see color. And what a gift we have. What a blessing. And what about all the other things that we can do? You can walk standing up, you know? And you can dance, and you can drive a car, and you can fly an airplane. Yeah. Here I am, 25 years old. I have my pilot's license. I fly airplanes. My son builds and designs ultralight airplanes that he sells all over the world. And we just have a great time together. But you see, why limit yourself? My son takes my students up for flights in his airplane. And he says, how do you like it? They say, wonderful. He says, now, just hold your hands on the controls like this here. Put your feet on the controls there. And just do this here and do that. And he says, now, push it forward. Pull it back. Get the feeling of it. You know, and piece of lunch here. And he said, enjoying them? Yeah. And they said, you're not holding on. No, no, you're flying. I'm flying. And they fly. Every one of my students. They get in the plane with him. Within 5 minutes, they're flying. And they're just having a ball. Wow, wow, I didn't know I could do it. 5 minutes before that, they didn't know they could do it. 5 minutes later, they're doing it. Why, anytime, you see? we tell ourselves we can't do things. We tell ourselves God in us doesn't know how to do things, but God in us knows how to do everything. Right? You're having a talk with God. You're listening. Not really having a talk, you're listening. And so God is silent. Talk to me, God. Tell me. Say something. You know, been sitting here for an hour waiting. Well, what were you listening to? God says to you. Well, I wanted to hear your voice. God says, tell me, what would my voice sound like? And he's telling us these things and we don't even know him. What would my voice sound like? Well, you sound just like me, actually. That's right, I am you. Now, do you listen when you speak? Do you sometimes tell yourself, no, I don't want to do that. The other time you say, yes, let's go for it. And then do you do it? Or you say sometimes, yes, ooh, I'd love to go for it, but it's too awe-inspiring for me to go for it. How could I ever do this? How could I ever handle it, you know? And what would happen? You don't do it. God often speaks to us very lovingly, gently, sometimes chidingly and smilingly, and we don't hear him. We don't hear him because we think it's ourselves. And we think that we have no right to make a decision like that. Mark had one plane that he sold, my son Mark, and he sold this plane to this guy who was 73 years old. And he was old grandpa, 73 years old, acting old and stuff like that. He bought the plane. He flew it around his property up in San Luis Obispo, California. And he was down the wall. And he loved it. He landed, took off, he landed, took off. Everybody said, oh man, what are you doing flying that truck? You know, and they don't know that every moment he was flying, he was younger and younger and younger because he was doing what very few people have the privilege of doing, flying himself, taking off from the ground and soaring with the birds and just looking at the clouds from the topside and having just a great old time. Now, is he being himself and having fun? Did God inside of him say, go for it? What if he crashed and killed himself? So what? So what? He did what he liked doing. He didn't go up there to crash and kill himself. He went up there to fly. And if through some misattitude of mind he crashed, then he crashed. And big deal. Big deal. I had one man. I was at a newspaper in Atwater, and I was called out by the police, and I went to the scene, and this man was 78 years old. He hit a telephone pole with his car, and the telephone pole went right through his belly. Can you imagine that? Spreading everything. And he's talking, you know. He said, this doesn't feel good. I can imagine it doesn't feel good. And so I said, but, you know, you have the right attitude of mine. I said, you're a fantastic man. I said, you're going to live through this just beautiful. You're going to be a greater person because you're living through this. You're going to be just fantastic. You'll be just great. I told him, you know. And he says, oh, you're just saying that to be nice. I said, do you believe that? No. I said, do you believe you're going to come through fine? Yep. I said, do you believe that you're sitting there with a telephone pole sticking out of your gut and you're talking to me just like nothing? You don't have any pain or anything else? Why is that? I said, because you believe in yourself. And I said, you're wonderful. Well, the fire department came, sawed off one side and sawed off the other side and took him to the hospital. And then they removed it, you know. And after they removed it, then they put him back together. And everything knit together perfectly. Everything knit together perfectly. He had no problems whatsoever. And he lived another 10 years till he was 88. Now, I mean, that's an amazing thing. But you see, when you listen to God inside of you, he said, I didn't want to die. I didn't want to live. I didn't want to die. I just want to be me, you know. And I'm happy. Another woman, she was telling us that I went to visit her because she was 100 years old. And she's sitting on a rocking chair in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, and rocking her chair and drinking her corn liquor and smoking her corn cob pipe. And I said, well, ma'am, to what do you owe your longevity of your life? She says, drinking my corn liquor and smoking my pipe and sitting here enjoying myself. And one more thing. And I said, well, what is that? She said, well, see here? There's one tooth. All my teeth are gone. But see that tooth? That's a brand new tooth. I grew that brand new tooth for my 100th year. And I'm going to grow a new tooth every year from now until I get all my teeth back. And I said, well, why don't you grow all your teeth at once? She says, hey, I'd have nothing to do. Every year I'm going to grow a new tooth back. See, she listened to God within her. And she was not terribly creative, but she certainly was interesting. And she wanted to have something to do. And now, whether she was thinking about her tooth all the time or what she was doing, but she drank her corn liquor, and she smoked her corn cob pipe, and she was as happy as could be. Now, I know of her up to 4 years later, that's all, because I was at other locations, but she had grown back four teeth altogether. Four teeth. Now, I mean, that's a mind that makes a choice. That's a mind that makes a choice. In this month's Discover, National Geographic magazine, there's an article about the autistic boy and a few other things, and also about the girl's brain. And they had to take a tumor out of her brain. And so they took pictures of all this. And they lifted off the skull, and they found the tumor, and it was in a touchy place, but they wanted to make sure that they didn't touch any of her zones which operated her hands, her speech, her vision, and all that stuff. And so they went carefully around the edge, wanting to get all the cancer cells out, and went all the way around, and went all the way and cut it out gently and gently, and took it all out. And at each point, they would touch her nerve zone, and she'd blink her eyes, or she'd say, yes, I can do that, you know. And she would do the things. She did this consciously. She was conscious while they were in there working on her brain. And then when they were to the point of having done the necessary work, they gave her full anesthetic so she could sleep while they put the brain, the cap back on. But you see, she could do anything. God in her was telling them what to do. God in her was telling them where the muscles were moving from and how the brain was conducting these activities. I'm telling you these things not to make you surprised about something, but to let you realize that God in you is always talking to you. God in you is always telling you wonderful things to do. And that's only the beginning. That's only the beginning. They had a picture of a beautiful little Hindu boy, a little naked baby boy, maybe 3 months old, 2 months old. And a python was coiled up. And it was his bed on this 11-foot python that was lying under him as his bed. He had no fear of it. He had no fear of it. And the python had no fear of him. And usually snakes are something we have a normal fear from. But you see, his brain was being taught. The divine within him had no fear, and there was nothing to institute that fear. But he went on and talk to the divine within him. He was just, if you see the National Geographic for, I believe it's this month, March at least, you'll see that series of pictures. Beautiful things in it. What is it that we do? What is your philosophy? Is your philosophy the philosophy of I like me? Of being yourself and having fun? If your philosophy is of being yourself and having fun, you will be yourself and you will have fun. If your philosophy is living your life in a fantastic, glorious manner, you will live your life in a fantastic, glorious manner. If your philosophy is that all is good and very good, that's what you will do. That's what God is speaking through you, telling you. It's all in divine order, then that's what it is. All is in divine order. What sort of school are you coming out of? In you are an infinite number of schools. You can have the school of unhappiness. You can have the school of happiness. You can have the school of success or failure. You can have the school of joy or sadness. You can have any school you want to come out of in your inner consciousness as you listen to God. Because in God's eyes, there is no right or wrong. in God's eyes, there is no up or down or bad. Jesus made these remarks. Everybody, every philosopher, every great religious leader has made these remarks. And what was it that our friends, the philosophers, told us? They said, man, know yourself. Jesus said, man, know thyself. Man, know yourself. Know who it is that you are, and who it is that you want to be, and who it is that you admire in yourself. Now, this is what you do during the third hour. You get to know God, perhaps for the first time in your life. Think you've lived all these years with God in you, and you never really had a toe-to-toe chance with Him, a one-to-one talk with Him. And you can. And God is not a he, it is not a it, it is not a her, it is an essence. It is our idealization of who we are. It is our dream of who we are. It is our expression of who we are, and that's what matters. You understand that? That's what matters. Be yourself and have fun. If you are being yourself and have fun, then you are getting all the good out of life that life has to offer. If you're not being yourself and having fun, then you're living somebody else's show. If your kids come running in the house being little nasty angels, the first thing you do to them is you say, hi, come on now, time for a glass of milk and a cookie. And all of a sudden they say, what? Because this is different. You usually say, shut up, you damn kids, you're dirty, get down, put your clothes on, and come on, let's have a cookie and some milk. And then they go in the kitchen, even the neighbor kids who are with them, because there's always neighbor kids, and sit in the kitchen and say, well, how was your day at school today? Did you have fun? I never hear anything about what you kids do on the playground. Do you ever do anything on the playground? Oh, yeah, I will. And they start talking. What do you do on the playground that's so much fun? Well, what we do on the playground that's so much fun is when we talk to each other and we tell each other nice things about each other. What? You do that? When did you learn to do that? Well, Molly's grandmother is going to some church in Tucson, and they teach that. And so Molly is teaching us all about what they learned in that church in Tucson. And she says, it is such fun. Well, can you tell me about it? Molly, can you tell me about it? Well, it's like this. I am God. Molly, that's beautiful. Why are you God? Because that's all there is. There's nothing else in this entire universe except God. I'm God. Well, Molly, you are a brilliant little girl. And the other kid said, I'm God too, I'm God too, I'm God too. And the mother says, yes, you are. Now, let's play a game every night when you come home from school. And we'll have milk and cookies at the time. Milk and coffee, milk and cookies, and we will play the game. What's the game, Mom? What's the game? Oh, you come on tomorrow. After school you come, we'll have the first part of the game. So they all come over after school the next day. And what's the game, Mom? What's the game? Well, here's your cookies, here's your milk. Now, we're going to go around the circle with all of you, and each one of you get a chance to tell one thing. One thing that you think how you, as God, would act, okay? Now, how would you as God, doing what, Mom? Well, how would you as God act if your mother asked you to put your clothes away? Oh, you know. And then they start thinking how I, as God, would act if Mama asked me to put the clothes away. And how would you act if Mom says, you're happy to play with your toys all you want, but when you're done with them, always put them back in the toy box? No, that's just a good question. That's what my God and me asked me about your God and you. I would be interested to know what your God would say about that. What does God in you say about putting your toys away, hanging up your clothing? What does God in you say about coming home straight away from school and doing your homework and then being done with it and then going out to play until supper? What does your God in you say? What does your God in you say? And you see, a little bit of this goes a very long way. And the children instantly respond with love in their hearts. They instantly, I'd like to go over to your house. Your mama is interesting, you know. Your mama asks interesting questions. My mama has never talked to me about that. Well, let's all go over to your place and let's talk to your mama like that. And tell your mama that God is in you if you want. And that we play the game. How would I act if I were God, you know? And if the mother's wise at all, she'll see that that was about the most intelligent way of teaching the kids values and teaching the kids things when they listen within and start hearing them. Now, wouldn't that be a nice way to start out learning? This one woman went to her porch, and every time she went to her porch, her young son, 4 years old, was sitting out there on a rocking chair meditating, or sitting there, rocking. And she said, "Son, what are you doing?" "I'm thinking." "You want to tell me that?" "No." "Okay, you go ahead." Next day she comes out, he's sitting there for an hour or so. "Son, what are you thinking about? You have the most long, beautiful thoughts, I tell you. What are you thinking about?" "Well, Mom, I was just thinking how lucky I am to have a mommy and daddy like you that let me think in quiet." "Ooh, well, okay, son, you go right ahead and you think in quiet now." And the next day she goes out. Well, after a while, she talked to her son and asked him some more things. And he told her some of the things that he was thinking about. He was thinking about having peace on earth because he heard it on television that there was a war somewhere. He thought about money for people who were in the Susanna wave and needed a little blessing. And he says, "You know, Mom, I can send them my allowance for the next couple of weeks and that would help too." And the mother says, "Oh, I don't think, Mom, if I want to do it, let me do it, please." So she takes his allowance of 45 cents, puts it in an envelope that costs 50 cents to mail, and sends it in. And is he a bigger boy? Oh my goodness. Is she a bigger lady? Oh my goodness. Do you think maybe she slips a few dollars in herself? You know? Now, how many children stop and have those long thoughts? Many. How many parents say, "Oh, that's not something you have to worry about right now. We have agencies that take care of that." "But Mom, I want to help." You see, if we would allow our children early in life to start having conversations with God inside of them. I know we read this book, Conversations with God, but it's not the same thing. A conversation with God is where you and God are on even terms of love and peace and harmony, and you're living a life filled with goodness and right action. You see, talking to God is fun. Talking to God is like talking to yourself, because it is talking to yourself. And when you talk to yourself, are you always chastising yourself? Are you always putting yourself down for some silly thing that you've done, you know? Perhaps too often, but a lot of times you just say to yourself, "Damn, I'm good." Ever said that? Yes, we all have, at least if we're healthy people. "Damn, I'm good." And we should be saying that more often. And not out loud, just to ourselves. "Damn, I'm good. I'm all right. I'm fantastic." And the divine in you would be wiring in on that. And pretty soon, the divine in you would have a hot wire connection. And you would never be wanting to be in conversation with God, because you would always be in conversation as God in you, because you are God. It is so wonderful. It is so beautiful. Don't expect God to talk in any way that you don't. If you are a tough old girl, God's going to be a tough old girl. If you are a gentle soul, God's going to be a gentle soul. If you are a giving, loving, sharing person, God's going to be a giving, loving, sharing person in you. and I may have told you, my sister always gave me gifts. And I never wore pajamas, but she loved to give me pajamas for my Christmas or birthday. And then after a week or two, she'd say, "You gonna wear them?" "No." She said, "Can I have them?" "Sure." And she was an artist, and she'd give me a book on art. Beautiful book on art, an expensive thing, you know, for me, you know, and I wasn't even into art, but she was. And so, a week or two after Christmas, usually, she'd say, "Can I borrow that book? I want to study it through it." "May, it's yours as long as you want it." But you see, this is our nature. Was that God talking to me? Was that God talking to her, of a way of taking the gift money that she would give to me and putting it on the book so she'd have even a better book? No, not bad. Pretty smooth girl. And we all are pretty smooth. We all do beautiful things. Are there any questions on anything, anybody's part? You see, you're all speechless. Yes, love.
Can you tell me the value of dreams?
Speak louder so I can hear you.
Can you tell me the value of dreams?
The value of dreams. Oh, my. Yes.
Maybe you can wait for other clients. That's to
be... No. Oh, it's a very lovely subject. Dreams are an expression of our multidimensional life. Dreams are what we do on all the various planes of our existence. If we have terror in this life, we put terror onto our other planes of existence through our dreams. If we have love in this life, we put love into our expression of other dimensions of life. We have an infinite number of dimensions of life, and we have an infinite number of dreams. And every dream is exactly what we have put into it. Now, you have a dream that someone is drowning, and you save them. And not miraculously, but just nicely, you know. You save them, and they don't say, "Oh, thank you. And you don't say, you're welcome. It's just natural. You know, you were there, and you pulled them out, and they didn't drown. And they say, "Thank you," you know, and that's it. Now, if in the dream you get so enthusiastic about it, then in your other experience, you're going through something very much like that. You're going through that type of an experience, and you're having it. Now, in your dream, you have the privilege of being aware of who you are now and what you're doing then, if I can say that, even though it's all in the now and the here. And so your dream is either a flash, because you're not really taking a lot of attention to it, or you can really do it. Now, I had a dream where my son was flying his ultralight airplane, and he was crashing. My son doesn't crash. My son doesn't crash. And so I said to myself, "This is my dream." I said, "Stop. Roll it back. Now, Mark, you land that plane right." And so then he landed the plane right. I was in charge. Now, I could have had him crash, and I could have said, "Oh, this is a portent of something to come. This is something that is going to happen, that he's going to die, or that some person I love who's a pilot is going to die or something." And that is a lot of creative thinking on our part when we have a mind that is not pure and whole. When our mind is pure and whole, we don't create people having tragedies, including ourselves. And when our mind is pure, we have the right, because we're conscious of it, of entering into our dream at any time we wish and redirecting our dream, reestablishing our dream in any direction we want, on any subject we want. If in our dream they're stoning Stephen, you know, at the time of Jesus, because he was a follower of Jesus, and in our dream they're stoning him, and what we can do is we can just walk right over and take him by the hand, and we are the shield of uniqueness, and walk away with him and say, "Stephen, you are blessed. Go and live a beautiful, wholesome, happy life." And he walks away, and the people are still throwing stones because they don't even know that he's gotten up and walked away. You follow him? because that's not part of your dream, stopping them from stoning him. The dream was that you took him from that experience. Now, could you do that? Certainly you can. In your dream, if you see anyone who is having a horrible experience, and why you do that is strange, but and you're seeing something, you immediately say, stop. I do not allow this to take place in my dreams. And it stops right then. And as though they're all standing on the set of a movie screen. Okay, what do you want us to do then, you know? I thought you wanted us to have this scene. No, no. We're cutting that scene from the movie. We're cutting that scene from it. If you've read Illusions by Richard Bach, in there, he takes Donald Simoleon to see Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which Donald had seen many times. That is, which Richard had seen many times. And Richard said, then Donald says, okay, come on, we're going, middle of the movie. And Richard said, I have not done with the movie yet. You have seen it before. You know what's going to be. Richard, don't you know that you have permission to take your life and snip off the beginning and put it at the end, snip off the middle and put it at the beginning, switch any part of your life around and cut any part out that you don't like, and you can live your life in perfect harmony if that's your choice. You're in charge of your dreams. You're in charge of your life. You're in charge of anything you want, and notwithstanding what anyone else says, because let me tell you this, and this is extremely important. Extremely important. Herb, what are you putting this nonsense for? Well, you have a dream and you see something happening and you like that. You have a dream, you see the same thing happening but you don't know it and you don't like that, so you change it. You have a dream and the dream is all about horse racing, and you have the slightest interest in horse racing, and so then you say, I want to see a dream about raising a garden, or I want to see a dream about creating new types of tea, and so then you create the dream. You have a dream, and in that dream, William Tell is shooting an apple off his son's head with a bow and arrow, and you say, I am not into anxiety at the moment. William's son and his William Tell and his son are standing there hand in hand, talking father to son, enjoying a nice chat. There is no bow, there is no arrow, there is no apple. There is no tragedy going on that requires this action. See, you don't choose that. Now, every one of us has a perfect right, permission, and ability to create our dreams in any way we want them, to create our life experiences in any way that we want them, to do anything in any way that we want them. Every one of us. It doesn't matter what it may be. You may be born with a crippled body. You may be born with a perfect body. You may be born with a mind that is a little less than all the marbles there. Or you may be born with a mind that is extremely brilliant. You can change anything at any time that you want. There was a Lassie show that was on, and it was from the 50s. And Lassie was playing with his dog and having a good time. Lassie, the dog, was playing with his master, having a good time. And the dog wasn't catching the ball anymore. The dog wasn't able to know where his master was unless his master was talking. And so they went to the vet, and the vet said, the dog is going blind. And it's a very serious illness, and the vet says, I don't have the capacity to do anything about it. And so the boy heard about an eye doctor in the city, and he went to the city with his dog, skipping school, which he shouldn't have done. They didn't have to put that in there. But he skipped school and went to see the eye doctor, and he couldn't get into the hospital, couldn't get anywhere because they couldn't take dogs in there. And so he finally went to the doctor's office, and when the nurse wasn't looking, he went into the door, which he shouldn't have done, and he got to see the doctor. And he went in to see the doctor, and the doctor said, what is it you want? He said, well, my dog is having trouble with his eyes, he needs an operation, so, and the doctor says, I'm not a veterinarian, I can't do that. And he said, but you're an eye doctor, and you know all about that. And so, the doctor says, yes, but I don't do dog operations. And the boy said, doctor, take one of my eyes and give it to Lassie so he can see, she can see. And the doctor realized how serious the boy was. And so the doctor took out his instrument and looked into the dog's eyes, and longer than he had to, you know, made the story, you know, exciting. And then finally, he looks at the boy and says, that's very serious, son. There really isn't too much hope. Is there any hope? Oh, yes. And so then this big uptown doctor who is the, has all these expensive patients, you know, who could pay big prices for stuff, he tells the secretary, or his nurse, and cancel everything for the afternoon, I'm going to be busy. I'll be at the veterans hospital, you know, at the veterinarian's hospital. And so he went there, and he went into the operation, and so he operated, and of course it was a success. And everything was beautiful. But see, the thing is, now, the story could have been written that it wasn't a success. The story could have been written that the doctor says, get the hell out of here. What do you think this is, you know? Or the story could have been written that he met the doctor outside the hospital, which would have been perfect. And then he wouldn't violate anything. You see, the thing that bothers me very much about Harry Potter is a beloved book by all the students in school in many countries of the world, and it teaches you to violate your teachers. It teaches you to go against the rules of the teacher. You're supposed to stay in your rooms at night, and they're prowling the halls at night. You're supposed to do your courses the way you're supposed to do it, and they're using magic to do their courses and so on. You're supposed to do what you're told to do. You're a student, you know, and they don't. They violate it. Not everybody, but these two of the lead characters, three, four kids. And they're teaching children all over the world that to violate the rules that they're given in school are okay. And that's not okay. See, that's not okay. And anytime that happens, they could have rewritten that screen without the kids violating it, you know. They could do it that they're warned that if they aren't in their rooms at night, it could be dangerous in the hall. And they don't want any harm to come to the kids. Not that they can't or shouldn't or don't, but it has to be their choice. Because they're wizards. You know, they've got some special things going for them. But anytime you violate the rules of conduct of our society, of our world, of yourself, saying to yourself that you're God when you don't believe that, and you think that's sacrilegious, that's tough. But you can sing to yourself, I'm God, God I am. And you see, they could have rewritten the show so that the children were not violating the rules of their teachers and their school. But, you know, why don't we do things like that? Why don't we look for the right way to do things? Well, when we look for the right way to do things, then everything works out. And then our dreams all come true. Because our dreams are beautiful dreams. We have chosen to make them into beautiful dreams. You never thought that would end, did you? But this is what life is all about. Did that more or less touch what you wanted? No.
No, I just, the exciting dreams ended for me a while ago. I've seen universals and dreams now. I'm trying to figure out my mythology and how to read it properly and how to work with it instead of being afraid of it. It's not
yes.
A negative or dark thing at all. It's very, I'm getting help.
Yeah, but the thing is, when we are afraid of anything, we empower it to control us. Whether it is being afraid of mother's love, one of my students was raised in Switzerland, and his mother loved him so dearly that she was always smothering him with love, hugging him, mother, let me alone. So he finally escaped by living next door on the farm and working for the farmer next door, and that was his godfather, he called him. And he loved him, loved him. Well now, Greg is some 45 years older now, and so we were talking about this, and I said, Greg, why don't you go down, his mother has since moved to Australia, why don't you go down to Australia and tell your mother how much you love her, how much you appreciate her over love, the smothered love that she gave to you, even though you didn't understand it at the time. Now you realize that it was from the depths of her heart that she loved you beyond all imagination, you know. And do this. And he went to her and did it. And it was just like breaking the ice of a tremendous pattern. But you see, if you dwell on something and give it power, then it just continues to destroy you. Whereas if you can meet it head on and love it, good can come from it. And so all of these dark forces that are met in dreams and in certain types of circles that study these things, that's because they like that. That's because they create that. And if you have any participation in that, then you're going to have to work that out yourself. But if you say, hey, whatever you guys do, that's okay. Merlin the magician was a great guy. Merlin the magician, the negative magician that some people like to say he was only because they were on the opposite side of the forces of good, so to speak. Yeah. You were going to say something?
Yeah. So if you can't do that wonderful 3-hour meditation for 6 months, but you are, you know, trying to have a dialogue with God and you're not really hearing much, you're not really hearing an answer very often, infrequently.
The flow is not there, yeah.
Huh?
The flow is not there.
The flow is not. What do you suggest?
Well, I'm glad you asked the question just before the deadline here. The 3-hour meditation is a program. And from the 3-hour meditation, you will earn your doctor's degree. I'm kidding you. You don't. You'll earn your doctor's degree of being a 3-hour meditationalist, you know. And you will be able to go forth in the world conducting 3-hour meditations for yourself and for anybody else you want to do it. Now, I know that's not what you have in mind. What you would like to know is how you can have one-on-one awareness and intercourse with God in you. How can you do that? And the 3-hour meditation is a program that I teach because it works. But it may not be, and I would imagine it isn't, for everybody. It's not something everybody wants to do it, because the tendency is to fall asleep on the 3rd hour. And as you're listening to God and waiting for Him to speak and waiting for the wisdom and divinity to be revealed. However, if you can get so excited, then you don't fall asleep. No. This technique is a perfectly good technique. You can learn this technique and apply this technique and have a relationship with God in you, a real relationship that you know about, you are aware of, you sense it, you feel it, you taste it, you hear it, you are it. That's great. You will not necessarily find bliss by the experience, or you will not necessarily have illumination by the experience. You will have some, but at least you will have that step in the direction which is the way you want to go. And that's beautiful. You follow that? That's beautiful. So think in that direction for yourself. I talk about all things as a package, because I've developed it. I've worked them up into a package. But it's like saying, if someone comes to me and says, Herb, I need treatment. I am whole and perfect. I say, wonderful. That's not the time for me to give them a lecture on being whole and perfect. That's the time for me to say with them, I see you whole and perfect right now. I know that, and it is so. And goodbye. If we talk further, if I, the practitioner, see a person coming to me for treatment, whole and perfect, I've done my work. That's all I'm to do. I'm not to encourage them, I'm not to cajole them, I'm not to try to force them to come to the condition of being whole and perfect by my thought. In my mind, it's done. And it is done. And if, oh, you don't need to do that, but if any of you were to spend, say, 1 day with inside my consciousness, you would have such a good time. Because I greet more people and do more healing consciousness work than you would ever imagine,
Because of what? Because of what?
Because you're God.
Yes. And there is many, 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 many dimensions. And you are living on all of them right now, in the now. I am living on all of them right now, in the now. And I am working with an infinite number of people on all of them, in the now, right now. And I'm having a ball. I never run out. I have such a joy in doing my work. I love you. I bless you. And I'll see you tomorrow. And I guess we're going to be on television to that tonight, is it? Mm-hmm. So we'll have a few questions and answers for any of you who choose to turn that channel on. So thank you very much for being here.